Brooks is a medical practitioner. She's a healthy brain advocate. She's a future mind planner. She's also the director and founder of Brain Fit. And Jenny's promised me that my brain won't hurt after this interview. Hello, Jen.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Really, really well, thank you.
How much of our brain are we using?
Well, I'm hoping that between the two of us, we're actually using all of our brain.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Because there's all these... Remember all those years they used to tell us we were using about 30% or something, or some ridiculous figure?
They were fibbing. I mean, there's so much about the brain that we thought we used to know about and now realise it was completely wrong.
I have used it to its reasonable full capacity, which in its own way is strangely disappointing considering how little I know.
But the good thing is there's always capacity to improve, so that's the good news.
It's like a rusty tool, though, isn't it? If you don't use it, you lose it.
That's just so very true. If the more we use our brain and stretch that mental muscle, the better it actually gets for us. So, you know, we've got the ability to upgrade our thinking skills across our lifespan. So, yeah, if we just make that conscious choice and decide to go for it, we can improve how well we think.
But I noticed when I was looking through this book, which incidentally is called Future Brain, The 12 Keys to Create Your High-Performance Brain, you weren't a big rep for some of those early games which were used to stimulate the brain.
Yes, well, I think the manufacturers of those early games were more interested in the what they were going to make out of it for themselves rather than the actual value it's providing the people who actually bought the games and played them. They were great fun, great entertainment, but they didn't actually achieve what they were setting out to achieve, which was really that what you're looking to do with brain training is to improve brain function, which translates from the activity you're doing on the online game into how well your brain works for you in the rest of your life, whether you're at work or at home or whatever you're doing.
What about those sorts of people who are good decision makers, logical thinkers, people even who think outside the square? And there are others who don't. Are their brains just wired that way? Is that something that you get when you're born, or is it something you can acquire?
I think it's both. I think we're born with our own personality, and we've all got our own unique brain that is, you know, completely special to us. And I think sometimes we develop a particular interest more in the creative side of things, or sometimes more in the scientific side of things. But we've got a complete brain, two hemispheres, and we can actually develop those skills that we maybe don't practice as much, so that if you're more of a logical and analytical thinker, you can still go away and learn how to be more creative and learn how to think more outside the box, which is really important for all of us, I think. If we just rely on one way of approaching life, then we're missing out on what else we could be doing.
That old left and right brain theory is rubbish too, isn't it?
Well, it's another one of those myths, and we often like to stick to these myths because, you know, some people like to say, oh, I'm a left brain person, or I'm a right brain person, because we like to label ourselves. But, of course, we're using both sides of the brain. It's true that some brain functions are more specific to one hemisphere than the other, but there's cross-communication between the two hemispheres all the time. So we're not actually just using one side or the other. We're using, as we started off, we were using our whole brain. And, it's up to us to choose what we want to do with it.
You're a great advocate for mindfulness. What does mindfulness do for the brain?
I see mindfulness as a great tool to help us achieve two things. I think, one, a lot of us are really stressed out, and, you know, we're sort of bumbling through our days, trying to get through all our massive to-do lists and getting stressed out in consequence. And I think mindfulness helps to quieten the brain down so that we can sort of move out of all that foggy thinking with too many thoughts whirling around and just get clarity about what it is that's important right now in this point of time. Because sometimes we're worried about what's going to happen in the future, or worrying what's going to happen that's already happened in the past, and we're not actually dealing with the here and now. And I think the here and now is actually the most important thing to be paying attention to at a particular time. So I think mindfulness is really helpful for that. And the now being put into understanding what happens to the brain when we practice being more mindful or noticing more, is not only does it give us that clarity of thinking and quieter brain, it actually helps us to sleep better, we think more clearly, we pay better attention, our physical well-being is improved, we recover more quickly from illness, and it's even been shown that we live a bit longer if we practice some sort of meditation technique such as mindfulness.
So is it meditation with a new name?
It's a form of meditation. And
how does it differ?
Well, mindfulness is often used where you're focusing on something like your breath. So you're just sitting in a quiet place. You're making sure you're not being interrupted. You gently close your eyes and you just notice that you're breathing. And it seems such a simple, obvious thing to do because hopefully most of us are breathing. But it's actually quite hard to do that because with our busy minds, our minds wander all the time and you think, oh, yes, well, I can sit still and just notice I'm breathing and my air's going in and out of my nose or my mouth. But in fact, if you do that for just more than a few seconds or a couple of minutes, you notice that all these other thoughts are starting to sort of waft in and out of your head. And it's not about emptying your mind of those thoughts. It's about just quietly noticing them and then bringing your attention back to focusing on the breath again. So that's what meditation, the formal side of meditation, mindfulness meditation practice is.
So will that cut it with the boss if he walks by and he sees you looking like you're staring into space? If you turn to him and say, mate, I'm just practicing a bit of mindfulness, we'll be right in a couple of minutes.
Well,
it's good for the brain, don't worry.
Yeah, I mean, if you understood that it was actually going to make you think more clearly, get your work done more efficiently, make fewer mistakes, and in a shorter period of time, he might actually be really happy for you to do that. But of course, not everybody understands it or gets it or likes it, and we're all different, and it's not a panacea for everybody. Mm. But I find it's really interesting when I go around and speak to different people, so many more people are using it in the workplace. So many bosses are now encouraging staff to have a mindfulness session either at the beginning of the day or maybe at lunchtime, just to bring everybody together, or they can sit quietly on their own and just be quiet. Just give themselves that thinking space so we're, you know, shut away all that noise of the rest of the world that we're having to deal with the rest of the time.
Does the brain get full? I want to ask, because it's interesting, because, you know, in my music, I used to call them music radio announcer jock days, right?
Yeah.
I could listen to a song three times and I would know the lyrics. Okay, my daughter can do that now. She's 10.
Yeah.
So she can recite a Nicki Minaj rap after hearing the song two or three times. Now, that's...
Yeah.
And I could do that when I was a kid. I still recall lyrics of songs from when I was a child. But I can't memorise anything now. Nothing, no lyrics sink in. Is my brain full?
No, I'm pleased to report it's probably not full. It's just that with the passage of time, our speed of processing information slows down a bit, and it does require more effort to learn something new like that. So it's not that your brain's full, it's just that it's not operating to the speed that it did when you were younger.
Right.
So, yeah, trying to remember, you know, you've just read a fantastic book and you get into it and you think, oh, that was brilliant. And you get to the last page and then you think, well, actually, I can't really remember too much about it.
Oh, yes, I know.
And then you think, oh, is there something wrong with my brain? Well, no, there isn't. It's just that, yeah, that's the problem. As we get older, it's harder to get the information to go into the brain and get it to stick there and, more importantly, be able to recall it at the right time.
Okay, now, for those of you who are currently listening to the radio and staring at that mobile phone of yours, looking at social media, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Tinder, I don't care what you're looking at, look up, because Jen's going to tell you what that's doing to your brain. What is it doing to your brain? Good things? Not so good things, depending on what time of the day it is?
Well, all those things and above. I mean, social media is a fantastic way of connecting with people. It's just brilliant. And I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that you would want to get rid of your mobile phone. I, for one, actually love having my mobile phone because it's so useful for so many different things. But I think the problem can become when we become over-reliant on it, when we're stuffing every nook and cranny of every moment in our day because we don't like to be bored for more than sort of 2 seconds with checking our updates or scrolling through our emails because we've lost that art of just sort of sitting still and being okay with a bit of mental radio silence just for that short period of time. And because our technology is slightly addictive because, you know, we feel good when we see all these updates and our friends connecting with us. And, you know, when you feel good, you think, oh, I'll do that again. Hence the addictive quality. I think sometimes we overuse it or become over-reliant. So I would say to people, look, technology is fantastic. It's marvellous. But let us be the ones in control of it rather than technology controlling us. So take a brain break. Take a technology break from time to time. So unplug, switch it off, and just sort of remember to connect with the world and other people who are actually with you at that time, because that's the thing that actually worries me a bit, that we've got this technology, but so often you see people out and about in restaurants and other places where they're together, but they're not really, because they're all engaged in sending selfies or tweets to other people that are elsewhere to let them know what they're doing.
We're not getting enough sleep, are we?
And we're definitely not getting enough sleep, no.
Our sleep is broken.
Our sleep is often fragmented. We wake up and sort of frequently during the night. And it's not just the length of time we spend in bed. It's the quality of the sleep that we actually get when we're asleep that really counts. But we're actually sleeping less and less. They say that even over the last 10 years, we're now getting an average of half an hour less than in 2005. And I just think, well, that's extraordinary. But I think it just reflects the fact that life has got so busy and we're sort of using every moment that we're awake and shaving off sleep, thinking that's the best way to make sure we get more stuff done, forgetting that sleep is so crucial to better brain function and health, better brain health.
Book's called Future Brain. I hasten to add, it's actually really easy to read. It's not like a medical book, is it? You've done a great job of this.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Well, that was
even
my whole aim.
Blackadder's even mentioned in here, so if you're a Blackadder fan, there's a Blackadder analogy for you. Give us a couple of ways that we can get the brain thinking a little more, and will I notice it when it does?
Okay. Well, we were just talking about sleep, and a lot of us are sleep deprived. Try adding 20 minutes of extra sleep. Go to bed earlier by 20 minutes and just see over the course of 2-3 weeks what difference that makes. The other thing to do is to move it, because we all know that physical activity is good for our body. It's really crucial for better brain function, and it's not just about finding 30 minutes of huffy puffy exercise. We just need to be getting up off our bottoms and moving around more. And the third thing is to, as we also talked about, is to use it. Look for something new, something different that you haven't tried before, something that you think you might not be very good at, because then you're really stretching that mental muscle. And it's all about having a go, being curious, being engaged with the world, and having a bit of fun.
Sounds good to me. I like the idea. Future Brain, 12 keys to create your high-performance brain. How's your brain working? Is it all right?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the way my brain works at the moment.
I'm happier with mine, knowing that I'm using a little more of it than I thought.
Yes.
And you've assured me that I'm not going nuts because I can't remember song lyrics, so I'm feeling pretty good. Yeah.
That's excellent. Very good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah, good to hear. All right. Love you to chat. Thanks, Jen. Take care.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dr. Jenny Brockes. Remember that Future Brain. You'll see it there. And do not be afraid. It's actually, as I said, a very, very easy read. All right? It's 24 to 10.